Hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Blockchain Podcast from Neth. And today with me, Dario, we have Daniele Menzi. As always, hi, Daniele. How are you?
Hey, Dario. Nice talking to you, as always.
Now, Daniele, last time we spoke with Eric from the RAG Group, and he gave us an interesting application of blockchain for the Wangiri type of fraud. So from the voice call fraud. And that turned out to be a very interesting discussion, as we expected, but also to open up to many other topics, all the different frauds that we are seeing in the telecom world. Today, can we talk about the other big one, which is spam, nuisance calls? I don't know if, I've received on my phone calls, both in UK, on my phone numbers in UK and specifically in Italy right now, a lot of calls, almost a daily calls of people trying to sell me broadband deals. I don't want them. I don't know them. They pretend to be somebody else. How can I stop? That's my question. I can't. And interestingly, I'm part of this industry, and I had the pleasure of talking to the authority recently, and they, the Agicom in Italy. They're really trying hard, but they themselves, I guess, they're probably struggling to contain these services. It's not very easy. Your number is public, but it shouldn't be public. Interestingly, even in Italy, but not just Italy, you have fantastic places called the Do Not Call Me list, which have become, well, in I think the industry refers to as the honeypots. So the Do Not Call Me list is great list for call them. They're people, they don't want marketing services, we'll get them. So the real issues about spam, and it's creating such a big issue that we mentioned last time, and people are stopping answering their phone just because they don't want to be bothered, and etc. So here we go. Now, Daniele, fix it all with blockchain. How can you do it?
Yeah, so I think, let's say every country has its own spam kind of solution. In some country it works better, in others it works a little bit worse. And but if you think about the fundamental problems are two, which is one is most of the time, so you have three parties. You have the users, so the customers, you have the marketing firms, and then you have the telcos. And so the first problem is that in many countries, the marketeers have access to the source of information. So it's up to them to use properly or not. That's point number one. And point number two is that the incentives, or as I like to say, the penalties, are not really aligned. There is a kind of asymmetry on who pays in case something goes wrong. So all those are fundamental problems that are related to the spam and how this has been fixed. So now, if we look at whatever solution is in place in the world, some of them has pros and cons, but fundamentally, the problem is not entirely tackled in any country. And now, if we take the example of India, so one of the biggest mobile network, mobile, let's say, community in the world, with 1 to 2 billion people, more than 800 million, if I'm not mistaken, telco subscribers. So in fact, India has been trying to introduce a new blockchain-like platform, which essentially what it does do. So it creates a kind of a shared database, which prevents the marketeers to get access to meaningful data for them to exploit. So and the fact that the blockchain itself goes there to hash the data, so this means to protect clear information to be interpreted and misbehaved by the marketeers. So as all the process can be streamlined and secured, thanks to the fact that, yes, they are shared information, but the shared information cannot be used to misbehave. So that's in a very simple terms, the beauty of a blockchain-like solution as similar to the one that India is adopting.
So let me see, in layman's terms, are we saying that there is a marketing company that sends a request, I want to send messages to 50,000 subscribers, these numbers, that gets be sent to a communication service provider up to the level of a final telecom provider. and they would then check on blockchain, see if user X has given company Y acceptance, and then they would only send the messages to the one that would match it. So only the mobile operator in this case is actually checking the SGOBI keys for the blockchain through match and so on.
Correct. Obviously, this is a let's say this works fine if the if the spread of the message follows the normal path. For example, if we think about, you know, SMS distribution, you typically have the so-called large accounts, so that distribute the messages, and this large account is being provisioned by the telco operator. So at the end, telco has some role, right, to provision those accounts. But in many countries, the content of the SMS or the content of the message, or even the call itself, obviously the content of the call cannot be pre-validated, but at least there might be a kind of authorization process that goes in the blockchain from the telco provider standpoint and check whether this activity, which involve a marketing event, being a marketing call, being a marketing SMS, match the consent that the customer has given. And the fact that the customer has given the consent for this type of active marketing activity is not visible to the marketeers, right? Because if you keep this information fully visible, this can be exploited and abused eventually. So
back to the honeypot we were talking about before.
Absolutely.
You know, distort this.
And the key here is that giving the telco, in this case, the role to validate whether that event triggered by the marketeer is matching the customer consent, the user consent, and then deliver this event up to the end. So that's the, in a very simple terms, how this works.
Well, it's interesting for me to see that there is a similar approach to what we at MEF have been asking for long, which is the authority, the Telecommunication Regulatory Authority of India, the TRAI, has worked on this solution, not by itself, but this is the result of collaboration with the actual telecom firms. So this is an industry solution. So we like that. But have they launched their key? You know, have they managed to do it yet?
I don't believe entirely. So it has been launched on a subset of the population, not covering the entire population. The key is here to have it a broad launch. So it's, I don't know, it's a mix of operational constraints and there is also speed of adoption. Because more specifically, every marketeer has to register to the telco the header of a messages, if you're talking about, for example, SMS or emails, the header of the messages that is going to be spread out to the customers. So in fact, if you are a marketing agent and you work with certain brands under you, so every message of each brand of your portfolio have to be pre-approved and pre-registered. And this has a certain, you know, operational complexity to be dealt with, especially if you have such a big customer base as for Indian's telco operators. So in fact, to me, the reason why this is not extensively rolled out is because of the provisioning activity of pre-registering the header of each single message. It takes quite some time. So,
and we talk about message, but what I read in the past is that there is a part that also applies to calls, which is doubly important because message, a small delay could be acceptable, but in terms of connecting a calls, you really have to be very fast. So, and we're talking about numbers. I mean, we're talking about India. I think it's roughly 880 million mobile subscriptions, and men, you know, with people there. So the numbers could be fantastic and they big, which is another question I keep on asking you, because some people ask me, which if that works here, it would show that the blockchain is really working with big scales, and you know, scalability and latency are not such an issue. because we would have a solutions bearing and go.
Yeah, right now, I mean, this is a, let's say, I would say my advice is to have a look at the technical implementation done in India, because this involves, you know, IBM, because the framework being used here and the blockchain is one of the most used in enterprise-based application, which is Hyperledger Fabric by IBM. And the telcos themselves represent the so-called blockchain nodes, those that validate the transaction that enters in the blockchain. And those nodes are hosted on cloud platform like you know, IBM Cloud, Azure, and Amazon AWS. So in fact, what is nice here is that for telcos, they are using a very enterprise-grade infrastructure to roll out a blockchain-like solution, which can be helpful also for other purposes and for other use cases for them. So it's to me, this is a no-brainer use case for them to step into it, have a look, integrate their process and their systems to cope with a spam issue, and then, as of these attack integration, think about how to enlarge their footprints into it.
Very interesting. And the interesting that is, it's turning to be, a, you know, as you were mentioning, a proper enterprise solution, so something that is officialized. That reminds me that, meanwhile, BT and Ofcom, so we are another regulator, the one for the UK, and the British incumbent, the telecom fixing incumbent, have been working for a while in a similar solution with blockchain, just for the call side, just for the number registry. I haven't seen the latest, but there's been a consultation where MAF took part. I think it would be nice to see how the two develop and in parallel. But with another hat on, but not blockchain. Let me play the challenger of blockchain. US has done something similar. Actually, the FCC has mandated something, or well, let's say almost close to mandated, I would say, but requests strongly to the industry something, and they end up being stir shaken. That is based on a 3GPP standard, if I'm not mistaken. So something that has been standardized in itself, the stir part, if not the shaken. And so, and this is really a non-blockchain, I understand, technology, but something else that could be done. It, so you don't just have blockchain. You might have a solution. The blockchain is fighting with other standards.
No, there are some, you know, there are some really drawbacks. If you think about, for example, the right to be forgotten, it's just an example. How do you accomplish this in the blockchain? Because you can't be forgotten as long as you're there. So in fact, there's no possibility to withdraw a transaction which gives consent for you to be part of a list. So in fact, this happens in Europe. There is a solution for that, which is you implement kind of a, let me call it self-sovereign identity, which is an identity which is self-custodied by the users. So this means they maintain their own identity into their wallet. So they are the owner of the identity and not the telco. And I think we spent quite some time in a previous podcast discussing about the identity on the wallet versus the identity on the service provider, what are the pros and cons. So if we move to what I like the most, which is giving the users full control about their data, which is one of the, you know, long-term vision of a blockchain, in that case, you technically can do everything, because at the end, the user is in control and it's up to the user to decide what to do and what to give access in which conditions. The downside of it is that the users will have an overhead. So this means user have to deal with many things and people should cope with it. So we like it or not, you cannot have all the freedom and at the same time not have anything to do. So that's why, to me, it's like a trade-off that eventually will change from country to country, depending on cultural habits and depending on jurisdiction and a regulatory environment.
You're touching on something else which is very close to our heart at MEF, which is identity, and sub-sovereign identity is part of that. I mean, for a long time, we'd be explaining and saying what it is. And some companies are trying to build it. But let me check with you as well. We still don't have a working example of the self-sovereign identity, even in blockchain, do we?
Yeah, we have. So there are some countries which started earlier than others to implement a mechanism like this. So some countries, for example, Switzerland, are in consultation since, I think, 2018 about this. There was also a referendum, if I'm not mistaken, in 2018 to introduce a system like this that didn't go anywhere. I think November 2018, something like this. There are some countries which have introduced digital identity, like Estonia, back in, if I'm not mistaken, 2016-17, and they already started to roll out progressively this on the blockchain. So in fact, I would say there is a lot of use case, but very few real cases being live countrywide. Because, for example, if you take also Switzerland, so there are some cantons like Zug, like Ticino, that are starting to say, we're going to do this on a cantonal level. And if it works, eventually this will be extended on a federal level. So I would say right now it's still in a kind of prototype-like phase rather than in a fully operational scale or a fully operational rollout. But the problem is not the what, the problem is when it's going to happen, because this will happen. If it happens in 3 years, 5 years, 10, 20 years, the next year, we don't know. But the fact there will be a progressive adoption towards a digital identity that can give freedom to every customer to play with their own data as they want, I think is not under any type of doubts.
Okay. That's very interesting. So we will have to look and wait for more, it seems.
Yeah, we just need to provide here into this channel some real world examples on what are the jurisdictions that are taking active steps. For real, many jurisdictions have done a lot of marketing surrounding the adoption of blockchain thing into their country, into their processes. And I have to say, very few have really taken concrete steps to do it. So there are some, for example, to give an example on some countries, especially in the Emirates, and Saudi as well is taking very, very aggressive steps under a hood of the so-called Vision 2030 to create a brand new digital Saudi economy, you know, following, not seeing the decline, but following the change in the oil industry that has already started this year. So in fact, we will see countries like the United Emirates and Saudi taking steps, Dubai, Abu Dhabi. They're already digitizing all the government process thanks to adoption of blockchain, and they are doing it already. So this means every process that involves a government office, it stores data in the blockchain to avoid any type of paper storage. And this process is already in place since last year. So to digitize, but to use the blockchain as a legal technology to give legal relevance of every governmental activity. So this is something which is already in place. Self-sovereign will come on top, so to my views. But I think here the key is that more and more we will see the adoption of these type of use cases over time that have already been anticipated a few years earlier. And we will communicate to this podcast who has done it and what is the benefit being delivered.
I think our time is over, so there we end on the right note, which is stay tuned. Listen to
always,
us.
Always.
Oh, fantastic.
Don't miss one podcast, because if you miss one, it's like in the blockchain, you know, all the blocks are chained. So this means if you miss a podcast, then you miss the picture of what happened and what is going to happen. So you have to absolutely listen eventually a couple of times if something is not fully understood.
Oh, fantastic. So here we go. You heard it from Daniele. So make sure you don't miss us. But for today, I'd like to thank you, Daniele, and thank you guys for listening.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Fantastic. See you soon and hear you soon. Bye-bye.